At Public.com, you can earn 5.1% APY with a high-yield cash account. And while we can't say it's officially the highest interest rate out there, we can say this. It's higher than Robinhood, SoFi, Wealthfront, Capital One, and the big banks, too. Ready to start earning 5.1% APY on your cash? Check out the high-yield cash account on Public.com. This is paid for by Public Investing. 5.1% APY as of March 26, 2024, and is subject to change. A high-yield cash account is a secondary brokerage account with Public Investing, member FINRA/SIPC. Funds from this account are automatically deposited into partner banks where they earn a variable interest and are eligible for FDIC insurance. Neither Public Investing nor any of its affiliates is a bank. U.S. only. Learn more at public.com/disclosure/high-yield-account.
This Marketplace podcast is supported by Ascensus, helping people dream bigger, aim higher, and save more with financial confidence. Unleash the power of your retirement savings plan with innovative technology that makes things easy, top-notch service from experts who care, and flexible solutions that can grow with you. For more than 40 years, Ascensus has been helping savers achieve their goals. We can help you achieve yours, too. Learn more at Ascensus.com. That's ASCENSUS.com.
Well, let's see. Some inflation, a detour to the world of accounting, and a trip to the ballpark. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace. In Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdal. It is Tuesday, today the 11th of July. Good as always to have you along, everybody. Inflation is the economic byword this week. The Consumer Price Index comes out tomorrow. That is retail, of course. The PPI, the Producer Price Index, which is wholesale, comes out on Thursday. And this morning, we learned that in June, the number of small companies raising prices fell to its lowest level in more than 2 years. That data comes to us from the National Federation of Independent Businesses, and it could be a sign that input costs and wage pressures are starting to ease a bit. But it could also be a sign that sales are weakening and the economy is slowing just a little bit. So Marketplace's Justin Ho checked in with a couple of small business owners to hear what they are thinking.
About a year ago, James Beck realized he was raising prices a lot at his hot sauce shop in Houston called Iburn, so often that it wasn't even worth printing out new price tags anymore.
I just gave up and said, hey, if you need to know a price on something, just ask me, because there's just no point in putting price tags out when we're constantly having to change them.
But more recently, Beck says he started to hit a limit on how much he can raise prices. He sells a lot of hot sauce online, and he says the competition there is heating up. Plus, some of his products have just gotten unaffordable. Take a barbecue brine he sells that's almost doubled in price.
For one of the first times probably in the history of me doing this, I said to myself, I wouldn't pay $28 for this product.
Consumer spending has stayed relatively strong so far, but small businesses in general are worried that won't last, says Bill Dunkelberg, chief economist with the National Federation of Independent Business.
One of the questions we ask is, what do you expect to happen to your real sales volume going forward over the next 3 to 6 months? Those numbers are really not very good.
Dunkelberg says those downbeat expectations could cause more businesses to hold off on raising prices. It could also cause them to make some tough decisions
about things like spending and capital outlays and expanding the business and ordering more inventories.
Or paying their employees. Madeline Reeves owns a marketing and consulting company called Fearless Foundry. Just like James Beck, Reeves says she's felt pressure to keep a lid on price hikes, but she's also felt pressure to pay her workers more.
Employee costs continue to go up. And if you're a good employer, you want to continue to be able to, you know, help your employees be able to keep up with inflation.
But Reeve says her revenue has been falling for the last 6 months. And so?
I mean, the main thing we've had to do is cut staff. You know, my team is a third of the size it was over a year and a half ago.
Reeve says she's holding off on giving her employees raises, at least until her revenue gets to a point where she can afford it. I'm Justin Ho for Marketplace.
Not for nothing, by the way, and just to continue the theme of the program yesterday, China, Beijing reported its inflation figures this week. Producer prices fell better than 5% year on year. Consumer prices were flat. Secretary Yellen talked about this with us, the global challenges of a slowing Chinese economy. Wall Street on this Tuesday, ain't nothing going to get traders down. We'll have the details when we do the numbers. We direct your attention now to United States Securities and Exchange Commission Form 12B-25, Notification of Late Filing. That's the form that publicly listed companies have to file if they think they are going to be late making required reports to their investors. Raleigh, North Carolina-based Advanced Auto Parts had to file a 12B-25 recently, but what's interesting about this is why. Basically, they had had a lot of turnover in their accounting department and couldn't, and these are their words, attract, develop, and retain sufficient resources to get their filings done on time. And Advanced Auto Parts isn't alone. Companies big and small are struggling with a national accountant shortage, a shortage that starts, as Marketplace's Matt Levin reports, on college campuses.
When Drew Niehaus was young and single, going out in New York in the early 2000s, let's just say some nights he'd have second thoughts about his career choice.
My friends in finance would give me a hard time when we were talking to girls in bars or something like that, and they'd introduce me as a tax accountant.
His friends were investment bankers, and Niehaus was an accountant, but not a tax accountant.
And so I would lean into that, right? It's, oh, I don't do audit, I don't do tax, I do this more sexy accounting work, right? Let me tell you, that did not work.
Accounting has never been sexy, especially to young people not yet aroused by the thought of a nice 401k match. But somewhat similar jobs are luring away potential accountants. Josh Herbold teaches accounting at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign.
Data analytics jobs are taking off, and we do a lot of the same things, just in a specific setting.
The number of students who got accounting degrees dropped roughly 9% over the last decade, and the traditional accounting path of working very long hours for a very big firm before making very big money, Herbold says that model isn't viable these days.
It's not like it was even 30 years ago where you knew that you were going to be overworked for a couple years and you just had to deal with it. Students today have lots of options.
Accounting firms are trying, offering more remote work and better pay, and that should help another of the industry's goals, more diversity, says Janai Etienne, former CEO of the National Association of Black Accountants. But step one is just getting more accounting majors, period.
We're going to need to see a steady pipeline of students coming out of college, and that pipeline inherently will be more diverse because the demographics of our country are becoming more diverse.
In recent years, more women and Latinos have become accountants, but according to the American Institute of CPAs, more than 60% of new accounting hires are white. I'm Matt Levin for Marketplace.
This is none of my business, but if you're a work-from-home person, where are you working? I ask because working remote means different things to different people. A lot of companies are finally starting to sort out their policies on where they expect people to work, usually a variation of some kind of hybrid schedule. Others are good with fully remote full-time. What about really remote, though? Some, maybe many companies, require their employees be within the United States. Some workers, though, are working their way around that. Marketplace's Kristen Schwab made some calls.
Whenever I set up interviews with this one source, we'll call her Laura, I notice something funny. She always schedules our calls in central time.
Yeah, because my computer is scheduled in central time, so that anytime someone asks me a question is work-related, I check the time on this tablet.
We're concealing Laura's real identity because, spoiler alert, Laura's employer thinks she's in Tennessee. She's actually living in Portugal.
I have this very nice apartment with this beautiful view over a river and this big balcony room made of windows.
Laura works in tech and has been living in Lisbon for a little less than a year. Portugal offers a flexible remote work visa, and she wants to work there in part because her American dollars go further. Laura makes about 50 grand a year.
Yeah, I could live in Memphis with that, but in Portugal, you know, if someone's like, oh, yeah, let's eat at this restaurant, I don't even think twice about it, you know, just kind of go and do whatever I feel like.
Of course, these aren't details she shares with her coworkers. She doesn't talk much about her personal life at all. She's worried she'll slip up.
Because if I accidentally talk about the fact that I don't drive anywhere or that I'm going to the beach and stuff like that, so I just avoid it.
Laura says she's met other digital nomads secretly working abroad, and there are Reddit threads to prove it. People share tips about using a VPN to conceal their location, and they keep up with local weather so they know to commiserate about the snow in Chicago when they're really on a beach in Brazil. These workers take the risk because, more and more, fully remote work doesn't mean free-for-all.
There is some prohibition now on just being able to work from everywhere.
Sarah Dick is a VP at Gallagher, a consulting firm that helps businesses strategize their work abroad policies. She says it comes with complications, big ones, like what if a war breaks out, medium ones, like taxes, insurance, and data security, and small ones, like tech support.
You know, you can't just run over to the, you know, the local office, get your laptop turned in and get a new one.
Plus, Dick says working from abroad isn't all fun and games. For one, there's loneliness. It's hard to make friends when everyone's at dinner and, because of the time difference, you're still tied to your desk.
People think, oh, it's going to be great, you know, live by the sea and work for 6 months on my own. But the reality is that adjustments are harder than you think.
You know what else is harder than you think? Actually pulling off the super secret mission of living abroad. Take it from another worker, we'll call him Matt. About a week into his undisclosed trip in Mexico, he got busted.
I'm at the co-working space, and I get a call from my manager. Where are you?
IT flagged suspicious activity on his computer.
In about 30 seconds, I fessed up to where I was. They demanded me to come back with my laptop within 24 hours.
And then he was fired. Now, you'd think this story ends with Matt learning some lesson about how lying always catches up with you, but he is at it again. Matt works in data analytics, and his new employer thinks he's in Washington State. He's actually rock climbing in Canada.
Wait, so you're doing this again? Why haven't you told them?
I think it's maybe... there's a risk if I do ask that they'll say no.
He doesn't actually know if his work won't let him live abroad. To stay in Vancouver, he'll need a work visa, which would require employer approval.
I probably should. I just haven't had that conversation yet.
What's the saying? It's easier to ask for forgiveness than it is to get permission. In New York, like actually for real in New York, I'm Kristen Schwab for Marketplace.
Coming up.
Because of that, things have gotten a little bit stale.
Trying to freshen things up a bit then. But first, let's do the numbers. Dow Industrials up 317 today, 0.9%, closed at 34,261. The NASDAQ gained 75 points, about 0.5%, 13,760. The S&P 500 jumped 29 points, 2/3 of 1%, 44 and 39 there. A federal judge ruled today that Microsoft can indeed close its $69 billion deal to buy the video game company Activision Blizzard. Activision Blizzard share spiked 10% on the day. Microsoft ticked up about 0.2%. The Consumer Financial Protection Bureau ordered Bank of America to fork over more than $100 million in penalties today to compensate bank customers after it double-dipped on fees. Still, and all Bank of America shares inched up about 1.2% today. Bond prices were up as well. The yield on the 10-year Treasury note fell 3.97% is the yield. You're listening to Marketplace.
Looking for the highest interest rate on your cash? At Public.com, you can earn 5.1% APY with a high-yield cash account. And while we can't say it's officially the highest interest rate out there, we can say this. It's a higher rate than Robinhood, a higher rate than SoFi, a higher rate than Marcus, a higher rate than Wealthfront, frankly, a higher rate than Capital One, a higher rate than Ally, a higher rate than Barclays, a way higher rate than Bank of America and Chase, a higher rate than Citi, Wells Fargo, Discover, and it's a higher rate than American Express, too. So if you want to start earning 5.1% APY on your cash, check out public.com. We can't say it's the highest interest rate, but it's pretty darn up there. This is paid for by public investing. 5.1% APY as of March 26, 2024, and is subject to change. A high-yield cash account is a secondary brokerage account with public investing, member FINRA/SIPC. Funds from this account are automatically deposited into partner banks where they earn a variable interest and are eligible for FDIC insurance. Neither public investing nor any of its affiliates is a bank. U.S. only. Learn more at public.com/disclosure/high-yield-account. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/marketplace, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/marketplace now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/marketplace.
And now a word from our sponsors at Betterment. Do you want your money to dream big? Do you want your money to be a total self-starter? Are you annoyed that your money doesn't work hard enough? Don't worry. Betterment is here to help. Betterment is the automated investing and savings app that makes your money hustle. Their automated technology is built to help maximize returns, meaning when you invest with Betterment, your money can auto-adjust as you get closer to your goal, rebalance if your portfolio gets too far out of line, and your dividends are automatically reinvested. That can increase the potential for compound returns. In other words, your money is breaking a sweat while you can be breaking bread. You'll never picture your money the same way again. Betterment, the automated investing and savings app that makes your money hustle. Visit Betterment.com to get started. Investing involves risk. Performance is not guaranteed.
This is Marketplace. I'm Kai Rizdahl. Underwear with the brand Fruit of the Loom. Paint with Benjamin Moore. Choo-choo trains with the Burlington Northern Santa Fe. Also on the list of industries Warren Buffett's Berkshire Hathaway is in, liquefied natural gas. The company announced this morning is taking a controlling stake in an LNG terminal on the coast of Maryland. Natural gas turned liquid, of course, can be sent by ship instead of pipeline, which you might call supply chain diversification, right? And since the Russian invasion of Ukraine and the attendant nat gas price spike last year, American LNG is having a moment. That terminal in Maryland is just one of seven LNG terminals in this country. There are plans afoot, as Marketplace's Lily Jamali reports, to build several more in the coming years.
A decade ago, the U.S. barely registered as an exporter of liquefied natural gas. That's changed, says Sam Dart, head of global natural gas research at Goldman Sachs.
This year, in fact, the U.S. will be the largest LNG exporter in the world.
Much of that LNG now goes to Europe, which has been trying to stop using Russian natural gas since the war in Ukraine began. The massive and expensive build-out of LNG infrastructure projects has been touted as a necessary investment. But Dart says becoming a larger natural gas player comes at a cost.
The U.S. exports LNG, exports energy security to the rest of the world, but imports volatility.
LNG prices are so volatile because it's often used to ease energy shortages around the world, says Clark Williams Derry of the Institute for Energy Economics and Financial Analysis.
So if there's a cold snap in North Asia, if there's a drought in Brazil, or as we saw last year, if there's a war in Europe that disrupts gas supplies, then LNG gets called on to backfill those shortages.
And by sending more natural gas abroad, the U.S. consumer could be affected by wild price swings.
What that means is that there will be times like we saw last summer when gas prices double or triple or quadruple.
Worth it to help allies, right? Well, it can help, says Anna Mikulska, a fellow at Rice University's Baker Institute, but it's not a guarantee.
U.S. LNG is not owned by the U.S. government. It's owned by private companies that are directed by profit, whether there is a demand for the gas, and so on and so on.
And a feature of U.S. LNG contracts is that once a buyer picks it up at a U.S. port, there are no promises about where it ends up. As U.S. influence on LNG markets rises, Mikulska says its utility as a geopolitical tool diminishes. I'm Lily Jamali for Marketplace.
We'll be right back. The Biden administration says it wants to get this economy to 100% clean energy by 2035, a closer than it appears 12 years from now. Part of the plan to do that is to use nuclear power, and in fact, several new nuclear plants are in the works, including one out west. The company building that one, TerraPower, says it will be both smaller and more efficient than nuclear plants of the past. And while there are hurdles yet to be overcome, the project could reinvigorate some of the rural communities nearby, but also could bring some growing pains, because with new investments like this come new workers. Wyoming Public Radio's Caitlin Tan brings us the story.
There's a brand new coffee shop in the small town of Kemmer, Wyoming, and that's where I meet real estate agent Jessica Lozier.
Hi. Are you Jessica?
I am.
Oh, so nice to meet you.
The cafe is called Fossil Fuel Coffee Company, a nod to two things this area is known for: prehistoric fish fossils and the fossil fuel industry. Lozier says the community of about 2,500 is known for boom and bust cycles.
There's been times that it's been not busy and that downtown has kind of been dying.
And that's been the case for the past 5 years or so, mainly because coal mining and energy production have slowed way down here as demand has waned. City leaders worried that Kemmer would become a ghost town. But Lozier says that changed in late 2021 when a new energy industry showed up here. The company TerraPower, co-founded by Microsoft billionaire Bill Gates, announced plans for a nuclear plant.
It brought, I think, a revived, sense of security for the community that it needed.
It's about a $4 billion project that TerraPower says is perfect for the wide open spaces of Wyoming. But there's one problem: a housing shortage. Gordon Gunter walks the RV park he owns in town. The camping spaces are surrounded by sagebrush and overlook a river.
A lot of the guys that we have stay here, they're working people.
And over the next 7 years, 1,600 more workers are needed here to build the nuclear plant. That's well over half the town's current population. Gunter says he gets a lot of calls from employers, like one construction contractor recently searching for workforce housing.
I said, well, how many sites do you think you'll need? And she said, oh, around 1,100. Well, we've got 44 max at this point. And I went, 1,100?
Gunter is going to add 15 more spaces over the next few years. One motel in town is adding 9 new rooms, but that's still a far cry from what's needed.
We have to be a little bit realistic about what we can and can't do in our planning.
Brian Muir is with the city of Kemmer. He expects almost half of the workers to commute, since the town just doesn't have enough infrastructure. Its water and sewer system is aging. One of the main roads is still dirt.
We're not going to have a Walmart here probably for a long time, if ever.
TerraPower plans to begin the bulk of construction next summer. CEO Chris Levesque says if the Kemmer plant is successful, it'll set the stage for future projects.
We think electricity demand is going to double in the U.S. between now and 2050.
Levesque says TerraPower wants to build 5 more nuclear plants by 2035, most likely in the West.
So there'll be a big need for these reactors all across the U.S.
And a need for housing as communities near new reactors grow. For now, Kemmer still feels quiet. There is that one new coffee shop downtown, but also a lot of empty storefronts. On a recent weekday, there is one person out and about on the main street. The birds are chirping. A dusty truck drives by every few minutes. It's still small town Wyoming. Even though much of the energy world is watching how this project goes, this community still feels like a place that's waiting for things to happen. In Kemmer, Wyoming, I'm Caitlin Tan for Marketplace.
MLB All-Star Game is tonight in Seattle, the give-or-take midpoint of the season. And this has been a big year for baseball. Lots of new rules to liven up and quicken up a sport that's been getting fewer bodies in seats the past number of years. And so far, it's working. Attendance is up nearly 9% overall. 23 of the league's 30 teams are seeing a year-on-year increase. Because while baseball may well be America's pastime, it is still very much a business. Marketplace's Henry Epp reports on the baseball brand.
Before Major League Baseball changed its rules, Scott Bush, the CEO of the Society for American Baseball Research, or SABR, says the game had an aesthetic problem.
A lot of movement towards what's known as three true outcomes.
In other words, the ideal result of an at-bat was a walk, a strikeout, or a home run.
And because of that, things have gotten a little bit stale.
Plus, the games were getting long, averaging over 3 hours since 2016, according to MLB. And fewer fans were coming out to the ballpark. Attendance peaked in 2007, and the league struggled to get people back in the stands after the end of pandemic restrictions. Bush says all those empty seats can have an impact on how fans think about the game.
If you show up and there's only 5,000 other people there, you kind of look around and go, why did I come here? A lot of other people chose not to come here. What should I be doing that someone else is doing right now?
So MLB made some drastic changes to its rules. To encourage more hits and base stealing, the bases are slightly larger, and there are new restrictions on where infielders can stand. And biggest of all, the league added a clock. Pitchers now have 20 seconds at most to throw the ball. So far, it's worked, says Marty Conway, an adjunct professor of sports and business at Georgetown University.
Games have been cut by anywhere from 20 to 30 minutes per game, and I think people notice the fact that it's just a better experience for the fan.
And more fans are showing up in New York and Philadelphia, even in Kansas City, where the Royals have one of the worst records in baseball. At a recent afternoon game at Kauffman Stadium, Charles Bolden of Chicago said he loves the rule changes.
I think it needed to be quicker. I think it's getting back to the fundamentals of baseball. You're seeing more stolen bases, then you're seeing a faster paced game, which is kind of where we're at in 2023.
Meanwhile, outside Nationals Park in Washington, D.C., 20-year-old Emma Barrett is keyed into one of the reasons the league added the pitch clock.
I think that will definitely help, especially my generation. I think there tends to be a little stigma around baseball for being like 4 or 5 hour games. So I think it'll draw in some of the younger crowd.
And 28-year-old Amy Eckel of Alexandria, Virginia, who goes to several games a year, says there's another advantage to shorter games.
I used to come home at like midnight because the games were running until 10 o'clock. And now it's like you're home at like 9:30.
Not bad if you're watching the Nationals, who are well on their way to a fourth consecutive losing season. Baseball's TV ratings seem to be climbing along with attendance, and that's an important factor for teams who rely on what Marty Conway at Georgetown calls a stack of revenues.
You have media revenues, you have game ticket revenues, you have food and beverage, you have corporate sponsorship and all that.
Higher ratings could help teams negotiate better TV deals, and fewer empty seats during broadcasts just make the sport look better, says Scott Bush at Sabre.
It is better for your brand image if people show up and it's full or mostly full, because that makes them feel as if they made a good decision about how they were spending their entertainment dollars.
And so far, he says, the results have validated the league's decision to shake up the way the game is played. I'm Henry Epp for Marketplace.
Final note on the way out to do today, rather, we'll do a little inflation bookend. I saw this on Bloomberg, data out from Adobe that shows online prices in this country fell last month to the fastest they have in 3 years. The prices of goods sold online were down 2.6% in June from a year ago. Also, and related, today happens to be Prime Day, that online Dillapalooza thing run by a private company that we have all somehow bought into. All right, we are going. Here, though, is your moment of economic context. Comes to us from the great state of Maine, which today became the 13th state to offer paid family and medical leave. Will become, I should have said, the new rule is going to affect in 2026. Our digital and on-demand team includes Carrie Barber, Dylan Mietinen, Janet Wynn, Olga Oxman, Ellen Rolfes, Virginia K. Smith, and Tony Wagner. Francesca Levy is the executive director of Digital and On-Demand Around Here. I'm Kai Rizdahl. We will see you tomorrow, everybody. This is APM.
Hey everyone, it's Rima Khreis, host of This Is Uncomfortable. If you're looking for some good recommendations on books to read, well, you should join This Is Uncomfortable's Summer Book Club. Every other week in our newsletter, we'll share a new book that'll make you rethink your relationship to money, class, and work, while also featuring an interview with the author or an expert on the topic. Plus, when you join, you'll be entered in a giveaway where you could win some This Is Uncomfortable merch. Be sure to check it out. Sign up today at marketplace.org/bookclub.